Yes, the Commerce Committee for House File 2553 will come to order. I guess first thing would be to talk about schedule a little bit this evening. The House is back in session at 7 o'clock, and the Senate is not, is my understanding.
Technically, we're in recess, but only to take messages, so we don't need to go back.
Okay, so I guess I'd like to get a sense of schedules as far as, you know, or... Oh, it's 4:30, so we can stop at 6 after an hour and a half. I don't know if people have more time, but if you have any thoughts on how long we go, I'd be interested in hearing that.
Mr. Chairman, I personally have a commitment that I'm probably going to have to leave by 6. For just purposes, I'd like to leave at 6 if possible.
Well, I think we may be able to do that, depending on how the discussion goes. To make no predictions in that regard. So you have a second House proposal, members. I'll just walk through it very briefly. I think the Senate members have had an opportunity to discuss it. The House members have discussed it as well. But just to give a little bit of context, Section 1 ongoing versus one-time state response, the House proposal, and this is, I recognize, this is more narrative in form than it is line by line or statutory reference, but it just seems like that's a good way to continue the discussion we have. The intent of this offer is to move the discussion of the compensation fund clearly into a tort context by explicitly amending the state tort cap statute. And as well, to eliminate the House bill in Article 1 has a lot of language about establishing a fund, a special master, etc. The goal here is to take out a lot of that language and just leave a relatively, I think, significant but much less substantial language in state law, saying simply that the legislature in the future can address a catastrophe that is similar in nature to the 35W. Which collapse, or in scope, or magnitude, or type to a natural disaster, even if it may be man-made. This is a significant difference and a significant change from the House version of the bill. I still believe, and I know that I think Representative Kahn does for sure, believe that the House approach is a better approach because it acknowledges that for the same reason that we're here discussing taking extraordinary action, that extraordinary measures are needed to address the 35W bridge collapse because it is not the type of event that is contemplated in existing state law, whether it be tort law and the tort cap system or the natural disaster system of responses. We think that you should take it out and treat it separately, and in part because the legislature is really acting here to help restore public confidence that government will respond and will take care of the needs, at least to some extent, of its citizens when some event occurs, which really calls into the question government's ability to perform those basic services required of us. And so, which is in this case to make sure that a major piece of infrastructure doesn't just spontaneously collapse. To the bridge survivors, I don't think they much care whether this is a tort or whether this is something else. When they were on the bridge and it suddenly was gone, they suffered tremendous personal consequences for that, as do people who suffer from natural disasters. And this, from their point of view, whether it was an act of God or an act of man makes no difference. And so the House bill tries to respect at least the notion that this was a tort, but still try to provide a remedy and a response that is consistent with this extraordinary type of situation. As such, the compensation payments still, under the House proposal, would not have a hard cap for individuals. It does maybe this needs to be made clear, it does have a hard cap on the total appropriation in the sense that it requires a special master to make a payment plan and make offers that as though they will never receive additional monies from the legislature, which is different than, I think, what I would characterize as the soft cap, soft aggregate cap on the Senate bill. And the proposal reflects the date that Senator Lass and I talked about at the last meeting, which is the offer has to be made by March 1st, 09, and then the survivors will have 45 days to accept. So this is an attempt to create the best possible remedy or the best possible response by the state of Minnesota to this particular event, recognizing its unique nature. We are, to a great degree, recognizing concern, I guess, about creating an ongoing structure in statute. It doesn't. We will still have this structure that we've created as an example, but we don't put in codified law the various provisions that we would under the House bill in Article 1. And for that reason, I think is a significant departure from the original House version of the bill, and is an attempt to get us at least moving forward and talking substantive terms on the two main issues that we have to address, the two main differences between House and Senate bills. There are other pieces in here, but I think that for purposes of an overview, those are kind of that's the main approach that the House has taken in this approach in this proposal, and I'd be interested in hearing comments from either side. Or questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I first want to recognize on behalf of the Senate conferees express our appreciation for shifting the conceptual discussion wholly into the tort field. As you could tell from our earlier conversation, that was a pretty significant component, and I think it opens up the door for us to have further substantive discussions on exactly how to approach the matter within that concept. So we would certainly welcome that that approach. I think we did have some questions trying to flesh out a little bit more clearly what your particular bullet points were referring to. So I wonder if you could, either you or a member of your side of the conference committee could explain a little bit more detail what you mean by each of the bullet points.
Would you like, I can run through them, or if there are specific questions, but I can, if you want, I could just run through each one of them point by point.
I think maybe that'd be helpful, and then if we had questions specifically on each bullet point, we could follow up.
Okay. Ongoing versus one-time state response, bullet point one, amend the state tort cap statute to create an exception to the state's tort liability cap structure for catastrophic events. And the idea here is taking the concept that certain states have exceptions to their tort cap law for certain kinds of either types of events, or they leave discretion to the legislatures to appropriate more money in response to major claims brought against the state. And so the idea is simply that Minnesota's tort cap law could have a single exception created for events that are catastrophic. The definition of catastrophic is further down. The second bullet point,
if I can ask a question on the first bullet point. So then that would be you're proposing a permanent change in the existing state tort statute?
Senator Lass, that's correct. That's the proposal, although without all of the detail of a fund or specifying what the specific kind of exception might be in the future. It's not laying out a framework that would have to be followed. It's merely putting in place language saying that the legislature may decide to do something in the future. Senator, Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's very much qualified by the second bullet point. Says that you only invoke the second bullet point and then down to the last bullet point, that it can be only invoked with the legislative finding of specific appropriation. And then the reference, and then this question that came up again and again about how do we define what a catastrophe is. And, I think the last bullet point gives us, we're never going to define it to, this big bridge fell, so it's a catastrophe, but this somewhat smaller bridge fell, so it's not a catastrophe. But I think this, seeing this thing, which we didn't see when we first started, of trying to put the natural disaster legal framework in place. I can give the clues to refer to that, which I think is moving forward and is going to pass. Gives us I think the reference to that gives us an idea of what we're thinking about. Because we know that a person who slips on a slippery road and falls into a river and drowns maybe is dead as the person who gets killed by some natural disaster, but we understand fully that one isn't a natural disaster that needs a legislative approach and one is. So I think we're sort of invoking people to make that same kind of thought process here.
And I guess I would not disagree. The second bullet point does state, as Representative Kahn said, that this would only be this exception, this exception language in the tort cap statute would only be invoked with a future legislative finding and a specific appropriation, so there's no automatic mechanism. The third bullet point under the first section, again, this references the fact that other states have exceptions to their tort cap system, and which should, I think, give us comfort that an exception that we make would be legally and constitutionally defensible and minimize the risk that taking action here will create an opportunity to eliminate the cap system in the future. I think that's something specifically that the League of Cities and others have raised as a concern, and I think this helps to address that. Again, eliminating ongoing language from the House bill that we had regarding a compensation fund, special master, all the kind of structure that we put in place for a compensation fund, that would come out. Senator Lapp.
Mr. Chair, with that, you're referring to the permanent catastrophe fund?
That's right.
That is in Article 1. It's a little unclear to me when you said, or other provisions specific to 35W. So, is it all of Article 1 then, basically? Or, I guess I'm a little unclear because you seem to be referring both to the permanent catastrophe fund, but also saying something about specific to the 35W.
Oh, I see. Senator Letts, I understand your question. I'm not talking necessarily about deleting all of Article 1. I don't know how exactly it would be drafted, whether it would be in two articles or not. But I'm just saying, when I say provisions specific to the 35W response, I mean the kind of structure that we create to respond to this would not be necessarily a structure that we put in statute to be used in the future.
Okay.
And then finally, the last bullet point under ongoing versus one time, Representative Comics, the point that and Senator Hand, I think, has raised this several times about the definition that we have for catastrophe. And I think it's difficult to define numbers of people or state public policy concerns that would be raised by a future event or, you know, any of the other kinds of hard definitions of what might qualify. And so the last bullet point simply indicates that we should refer to the kind of catastrophic natural disaster type event that we use when we go into special session to appropriate money for, to respond to natural disasters. So the idea there is that, you know, whether it's scale or type, it's something in the nature of a major disaster, not just a car accident someplace. So that's the, you know, a little more detail, I guess, on those pieces. Compensation, Senator Lett.
The term natural disaster is something which I'm trying to sort out. If you make reference to the scale, I think it's one thing. I think we'd all recognize, you know, a natural disaster with large scale, lots of destruction, lots of loss of life or injury, that kind of thing, is, I think, a fair reference point. But type gives me a little more of a hiccup. Type of natural disaster means, sorry, in kind, a natural as opposed to a man-made disaster. So maybe you can clarify for me which reference you're proposing.
Well, Senator, I think the reason why I have both is that I think of a situation, and this is, you know, fairly you know, I guess a big comparison, but Hurricane Katrina, where you have a hurricane, yes, and so it's a natural disaster, but the system, but the failure of the city's levee system, which is supposed to guard against this kind of thing, was an entirely new kind, was an entirely different layer that was added on to the hurricane, and so there were elements of both in there, and I think that as a legal construct, there isn't there is a distinction between a man-made versus a natural event from a tort, you know, whether it is, so whether the event could be described and defined as a tort or not. But I think the idea with a disaster is that there may be events that have components of both, and for which the state may want to take some extraordinary action. If all of the there's an article in the news, Star Tribune today, about the fact that a tornado could strike downtown area. So if a major tornado struck downtown Minneapolis, but none of the sirens were working, as they apparently didn't have in Atlanta, but if all the siren system didn't work and there were, and the disaster response was inadequate, there may be significant public responsibility for the damages that occur in addition to, or that are exacerbated by the public response. And so there are elements of both. And that's why I think it makes sense to have both type and scale of a comparison to what could be in the type of statutory framework that we put in place pursuant to the bill that Representative Kahn has mentioned.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lester.
I understand that there are the events where both elements are present. It would seem to me that, you know, if there were a hurricane or in the Midwest, a tornado that were to destroy parts of downtown of the city, the legislature may have responded the same way we've responded to the southeast Minnesota floods or to the Brownsville tornado or whatever the case may be, by providing funds to rebuild infrastructure. But you cross it, again, a conceptual line into the tort area when you start making funds available in compensation for personal injury or loss of life. And to me, the hook there would be that if the sirens failed because of human error, or if the levee broke because of inadequate engineering or design or failure to anticipate storm damage, or poor maintenance, whatever the case may be. To me, that's the tort hook. That would be a legitimate grounds for looking at compensation for loss of life or for injury. Either way, you've got a larger scale, if you will, numbers of deaths and injuries involved. So, I guess it just seems to me that if we were to stay focused on there having to be a negligence component that would invoke the compensation for loss of life or injury, then that's the more consistent approach with an appropriate reference to scale. Maybe we don't get into defining exactly what that level of scale is. The legislature, as you indicate, will make its judgments. But that's what I'm trying to understand conceptually where you're going with the proposal.
Right. And Senator, we may include language, for example, that says that the state, you know, in part because of state action or inaction. We don't necessarily have to describe the legal negligence standard, but we could talk about state action or failure to act as being a required component of it before you would ever have the kind of tort cap exception. That's a possibility. Anything further on the first section before we go on? Compensation payments. First bullet point is consistent with at least the House position as it has evolved through discussion, which is that the special master makes awards to individuals without regard to the individual tort cap limit currently in statute, but makes an equitable adjustment to all claims based on the total compensation amount available as of October 1st, when the deadline for filing claims is. Second bullet point is that the special master, and this is a change, and this is giving them guidance, and I think partly in response to a question from Senator Bethel on Friday, that the special master will make some payment on all claims that come in that qualify under the definitions that we use, but they first have to prioritize economic losses over non-economic losses. And I guess I could add there that economic losses should include past and future economic losses.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hand.
Can I just ask for clarification on that? You say must prioritize full payment for economic losses. Are you saying that if before any other non-economic claim would be paid, that the economic losses would be fully compensated?
The scenario that I'm envisioning, Senator, is that some people may make claims that are purely non-economic claims. It may be emotional trauma or pain and suffering, that maybe they haven't missed work, or maybe as a result, maybe they had workers' comp or something like that. Maybe they don't have any out-of-pocket losses, but they still were on the bridge and had suffered. We're saying that any claim that meets the definitions that we have in place for the tort claim definition, the survivor definition, anything that meets those, you will pay something on that. That doesn't mean you pay it. And then every legitimate claim will be paid something, but given the overall pool of money, the special master should focus more on payments for economic losses, so that the idea being that the financial cost of the bridge collapse is not visited on the individual to the extent we can.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. You're not suggesting, or maybe you are, so I'm trying to clarify, that economic losses would be fully compensated. Is this language suggesting that economic losses would be fully compensated in the terms of the instructions of the special master, or just that they would be given priority, in which case they might not be fully compensated, but would be compensated at a higher degree than non-economic?
Just that they would be given priority. And again, without going too far down the path of saying what weight should be given economic versus non-economic, but that's saying that financial hardship should be met first to the extent possible.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Shire.
Mr. Chairman, you said something about past and future. Could you say that again? You're talking, I think it was in the context of this line.
The point is that people may have unreimbursed medical expenses in the past as well as in the future because of ongoing therapy or treatment or surgeries or anything like that. They may have past lost wages because they haven't been able to work, but they may have a partial disability going into perpetuity, which would be an economic loss as well. And that would be based, of course, on projections that physicians develop, as would typically happen in the tort context. Senator Lant.
Mr. Chairman, would you anticipate then that if there were not sufficient funds available to fully compensate for economic and non-economic loss, that the special master panel would then would pay all that they can of the economic loss before making any payment for the non-economic loss?
Senator Lance, accepting cases where somebody presents only a non-economic claim that still met all other definitions, in that case they would still be paid something for their non-economic claim. So you should honor all claims, but weigh in fact in favor of the economic damages. Third bullet point, the hard cap on the total appropriation is consistent with what we've discussed before, simply requiring that the special master make decisions as though they will never have another dollar to distribute, and give the kind of finality, I guess, is the term that Senator Mooney used. The last bullet point, the fourth bullet point, special master panel offers have to be made by March 1st. Survivors have 45 days to accept or reject that offer. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to go back to the third point, the hard cap. And I was reading through over the weekend the language in the bill, and maybe you're contemplating some other language, but it seems to me that how hard a cap can the total appropriation be if we leave open the opportunity perhaps that the legislature the next year could come back and say, well, we went through the process of determining loss, and it looks like what we estimated isn't really adequate, and we'd like to do more, and we could appropriate an additional amount to do that. It doesn't seem that there's any way to prevent that occurring. I think in the Senate position, what we've tried to say is there is a cap because there's an individual cap, and that cannot be exceeded, even though if you had I guess in theory all 180 some vigils on it who were affected by the bridge, if they all got the 400,000, that would be a 70 million cap. We don't believe that that would be likely occur. But the point I'm trying to get at, how do we make the total appropriation be the absolute appropriation, given that a subsequent legislature could revisit that and decide there could be more that would be available?
Senator, we can't do that. We can't, nor could we ensure that a future legislature wouldn't decide that 400,000 was not enough and they wanted to go back and change that as well. There is no cap that, I mean, there is no cap that we can impose here that would prohibit future legislatures from making a change. However, by doing it this, as according to this proposal, you are moving quickly enough, you're getting releases signed quickly enough, and you're instructing the special master to make decisions based on the amount that they have in the fund. So in many ways, you're settling the claims based on an explicit direction to do so within this existing cap. And once those claims are settled, there's little that the legislature, I mean, the legislature still could establish a special, any kind of fund for these people in the future if we wanted to, just pursuant to our general welfare powers. So there's no way you can ever truly prohibit it, but I think it's unlikely that the $40 million figure would be exceeded in the future if we follow this structure, just because the claims would get settled. Representative Fulber.
And I do think that makes a little bit of finality compared to the Senate, when the Senate kind of, I think in one of the proposals, they said, well, they could come back future for additional funds if that was, if the appropriation wasn't enough. So I think it's a little bit more solid type of cap.
And members, I'm carefully reminded here that the audio doesn't pick up all that well unless you lean in a little bit more, I guess, for everyone here. And Representative Silberg, you don't need a mic. You don't even need a mic if you're trying. So are there further questions on the first two categories?
Mr. Senator Lent. So it sounds like, I mean, there's some common ground in the goal, especially in Senator Moore's questions from our last meeting and this proposal. The goal is to bring this to as much finality as possible in this legislative session through this process, subject, of course, to the fact that any future legislature can do whatever they can get a majority in the governor to agree on. We try to bring as much closure to this entire process through what we're doing here.
Senator, that is the idea. But I also don't want to forget the other part of Senator. You don't even need to be here. We're just talking for you the entire time. The other.
Let me write the bill.
Well, let's talk about that. Now, the other side of the equation, which she said, which is that she also wants this response to be better than what any other response to a major event has been. So there's, you know, finality, but let's do it right too. I think was the two things I heard. On the appropriation, this is not a change from the House position of $40 million and no funds appropriated from the Trunk Highway Fund. And I know that there were questions last time about the budget and where the money comes from. And I, Representative Solberg and I had a brief conversation about differences between House and Senate budget bills and what assumptions you use and where the difference in funding comes from. So I don't know if you have.
Well, I think Senator Moore had expressed, you know, some concern that you taken it from other things, education, welfare, and so forth. And both the Senate and the House have a little bit different approaches to our balancing budget bill. From the House perspective, we are very aggressive on foreign operating corporations, using some numbers. These numbers aren't just made up from the air, they're, you know, things that Department of Finance shares with us, Department of Revenue shares with us. There's some additional monies coming from the, in tax compliance, and that's a little bit of a fluid number of how much, you know, is right kind of compliance, and the Department of Revenue has done a very good job of getting more tax compliance. This last year, give a great deal of compliments for further aggressiveness in that. And then just the third point is that I think the governor has recognized the $40 million as well. That seems to be kind of the right number. We don't recognize, I think we part ways in the 2020 split, but when we came up with the 40 number, had a great deal of conversations with the Department of Finance and the Commissioner on what the governor was looking at as a fair and just compensation as well. So.
Senator Lance.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, I guess we're going to retread a little bit of ground here, but of course the governor only has $20 million out of the general fund. And there seems to be consensus around this table that none of us wanted to go into the trunk highway fund here. So the governor was at $20 million when we're talking general fund dollars. And I will, I guess, restate what the governor's staff, anyway, expressed to me when I asked them where their $40 million figure came from, knowing that the Senate was going to have a lower figure in its bill. They said, well, we knew the House was at 40, and we wanted at least budgetarily to keep, to put a placeholder in there at 40. And that was where, that's where they said they were playing off of the House. Now, maybe it didn't happen that way. It's been a little tough to get a real clear sense of exactly how the figure was derived. I mean, it's a significant question for us because we kind of worked the other way around. We came up with the principles in the bill first, and then we, to use a term that I found out later was not commonly understood, we plugged and chugged. We took the principles and applied them to what we had received in terms of information about potential or damages or losses, and that's how we came up with our dollar amount.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Silver,
I don't know if the Department of Finance plugged and chugged. Is that what you said?
Yeah,
like that.
I told Mr. Moffman before, maybe it was just a Madison, Wisconsin thing, but he had gone there and he hadn't heard about that either. So
it sounds like
maybe
a good,
I'm making it up.
It sounds like a good bar.
Representative Solon.
Maybe we should plug a shot bar and get the two balls in one night.
But, you know, in my conversations I had with the commissioner, and there were two, three of them, they weren't in detail, but I had the impression, anyway, that the Department of Finance had done quite a bit of plugging and chugging, too, on it. We want to use that. I don't know what their detail was, but they were very comfortable, I thought, with this particular number. One time they were talking 60, and I understand that the governor is no different. This governor is no different than any other governor. And, he would like to have someone else spend the money, even if he doesn't have to. But I think the $40 million that the governor put in is a recognition, I don't think of the House so much, as what is more of a recognition of what I would term as fair compensation for the incident. Now, how they obtained that, I can't tell you, but we did have several conversations with the commissioner on this. I thought one time he was talking even 50. He had come down with some kind of an analysis. I don't think it was just a number picked out of the air. I thought it was some realism too, with the number as well.
And Senator, I will say that the House bill did not have an appropriation figure in it until after Representative Solberg and Carlson sent a letter to the Commissioner of Finance asking for their estimate of what a fair compensation number would be. And only when we got a response from the governor's office did we put the appropriation number in our bill. So it would not be accurate, I don't think, to characterize the $40 million. And I don't know what they may have said, and they may have characterized it this way, but I don't think it's an accurate characterization to say that the House came up with 40 and the governor responded to it. It was actually more the other way around.
I don't recall we got a written letter the response. And the governor had said it, or the commissioner said at the time, he was reluctant to put something in writing because the governor had not proposed his budget yet. And he said if I put something in writing, that's tipping the governor's hand on
and he wanted to wait for the whole budget proposal to come out. But I don't think it was the number that because we chose it.
I'm
just mindful of what the chair said at the first discussion of this, which was there seemed to be a budgetary comfort level at $40 million too. What went into supporting that level of comfort, I guess, is open for interpretation.
Okay.
Senator
Moore.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was just thinking about just back to the context of our conversation about the 40 from the last meeting, and it did strike me that even under the 40 appropriation, and I thought this clarified last week when we had our meeting, that because of the special master's panel's ability to pool all the potential claimants and then coming up with a formula to allocate that, it really is a formula that not everybody is going to get made whole. And I hadn't seen it in that light until we had our conversation last week, and over the weekend I was thinking about that. And so in retrospect, if you look at the people who have a lesser of a claim, really it's actually under the Senate proposal that if you have a smaller claim, you have the greater opportunity of being made whole, as opposed to the larger house cap, because we are going to prorate based on some formula. So actually, it's even under that bigger number, because of the formula to distribute it, nobody is going to get made whole. And I guess that's, I wonder if there's been a discussion or if that discussion took place when the House proposal was going forward among the committee members or in the House. As this proposal was going forward,
Senator, I mean, we certainly did discuss that issue. I don't think that we kind of drew the trade-offs out in that way because we didn't have a Senate. We weren't comparing to a Senate bill, but the notion that this is some amount less than full compensation clearly was brought out. Mm-hmm. I guess I look at it as treating this group of injured people all similarly. So rather than trying to say some people, in this proposal we say that you have to prioritize economic losses over non-economic losses, because I had the sense that there was an interest in having some direction given to the special master, and I thought that economic losses probably was what people were most concerned about. That's open for discussion, but there is no, rather than sort of picking winners and losers among the claimants, the idea I think is to appropriate an amount of money that is closer to full compensation, and then try to fashion a remedy that is as fair as possible among this group of people. Senator Hand.
Mr. Chair, I guess to that point, I'm wondering if the current structure says that a person could be eligible for up to $400,000 in compensation, and say a person has injuries or losses that would amount to, say, $250,000. Why would they agree to this structure then? Why wouldn't they just want to pursue the normal structure that's in place, go to court, be referred to the claims committee, and have the claims committee take it on and say, well, we'll pay your claim? Why would they opt into this knowing that they would not get full compensation when, if they chose the existing route, they would?
Senator, I'm not sure that if they chose the existing route, they would receive any compensation from the state because of not only the cap, but also just the procedural barriers and the kind of multi-step process that you have to prove just to get to the point of getting any kind of award against the state of Minnesota. So there is, I think, incentive for everybody to be involved. Now, if your question is, this is a touchy thing to raise, but if the question is, would some survivors, prefer a cap system because they have a smaller claim and they could get more money, or would they all feel like they're part of a group of people and they want to have something that is fair amongst the group? It's not a question I can answer, but I can tell you that the clear sense that I have from the survivors that I have talked to and their representatives that I have talked to is that they would prefer, in general, would prefer to have this approach that treats the group the same and recognizes that they were a group that went through a particular event and suffered a similar kind of fate, even if their injuries might be different, and that you're treating them with some recognition that they all, in maybe in a way, were one injured group on their own. It was different from other kinds of events. Again, I can't speak for them, but that's a strong impression that I have. Going on to the next, unless there's further discussion under the appropriation section, going on to the next section, the special master appointment and cost. The House initial offer was largely adopting the Senate position there already, creating a panel, having the Supreme Court appointed, and I think the language simply should give the Supreme Court authority to make the appointment, and if they would like only the chief to make that, that's kind of up to them if they're concerned about conflict of interest or something like that in the future. I think the court itself can sort that out. And then we have in the House bill, we had a 1% administrative cost cap, which came out at roughly $390,000. I think the Senate hit $750,000. We just put the appropriation level somewhere in between, $600,000. I think recognizing in part that there will be costs here, but I think that it's likely that any special master panel is likely to do this at something less than their full fees. Next section is White House.
Senator Lash.
Question about that, Mr. Chairman. did you take into consideration in that appropriation the goal that at least a member of the special master panel would meet personally with each of the claimants, recognizing there's some compensable time involved in so doing?
I think, well, the number isn't. I mean, we had 1%, you had 750,000. All of these are kind of, they're numbers that we think are in the ballpark based on kind of our experience, I suppose, in the legal community. So the 600,000 number, I think, is adequate to cover that time spent. But I don't, we haven't broken down kind of a estimated billable hour number and number of potential employees, et cetera, to come up with those numbers. I just think that that's in the range of what's acceptable given the total amount of the appropriation.
The Senator, I know that the Senate fiscal analyst, Mr. Mossman, has been doing some thinking about the amount. About the Supreme Court's initial fiscal notes that they had prepared in anticipation of this bill. They've been looking at some of the assumptions and what they thought would be involved in the amount of time. And I'm not going to ask Mr. Mossman for his opinion now, but maybe at some future point we could get a little more detailed analysis of what he thinks might actually be involved in terms of the expenses here. I mean, if we took, say, 150 claimants times a half an hour personal meeting for, 90% of them or however many would choose to come in and have a meeting, we could ballpark that component quite, to some degree. And we might be able to ballpark some other parts of it as well. I mean, we do have I know in the Senate bill there was an explicit component saying that the special master panel would utilize, to the extent possible, the existing state staff or consultants that have been involved in this from the risk management division. They've got some consultants that are handling a lot of the details of the claims process on behalf of the Department of Administration. So there may be a fair amount of information expense that's already been incurred, or that will be handled in other with existing state resources rather than coming out of this fund. So maybe we can get a little more detail. If whatever number we end up with, is going to have to be lived within, I suppose. But we want to try to at least, and if no one's compelled to use all of the money that's appropriated for that purpose either. Maybe we can try to narrow it down. I think we all just want to try to find the number that's going to work best to make the process work well.
Great. And Senator, I think the Senate approach on asking that existing employees be used to the extent possible is a good one. So it's also important, I think, to Minnesotans to say that we are not going to be spending putting this compensation fund in place to pay the administrators or to pay lawyers who are bringing the claims, and certainly not to pay the insurance companies. It's part of that context of ensuring that, to the extent possible, the money that is being used to help people meet the financial hardship that this collapse has imposed on them.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly why we put the number in that we did. We're all on the same page.
Yep. The next section is Waite House, and we did have a somewhat extended discussion about their proposed activities. This change, I know that there's interest in having some additional language to clarify how the funds are supposed to be used from Waite House, and I have, in this proposal, I changed the appropriations to simply be two, one by May 1st, and I didn't have it right here, but we already agreed, subject to a review, budget review by the Commissioner of Finance, but in any event to be paid by May 1st of 08, and the second half would be paid in May 1st, 2009, to ensure that at least as the second payment is being prepared to go out, that the legislature is in session if there were need to address the activities of Waite House in some supplementary or other fashion, or did it, you know, because the money should be more narrowly spent, at least the legislature would be in session at the time that that month, that second appropriation goes out, and some action could be taken if it were needed to be.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Lance,
I know we were going to be seeking some additional clarification from Waite House about how they propose to spend their funds, and so we'll have to hold off, I think, for another day on any more specific discussions there. I don't know that we necessarily reach consensus on who would review or approve any budget submitted by Waite House. I think the last House proposal was to change approval to review by the Commissioner of Finance, our response was to agree to the release date, but not to necessarily agree to the mechanism for review. And I'm not sure the Commissioner of Finance would necessarily be in the position to make a substantive review of how money is proposed to be spent. So hopefully we can address that part of it here. And it might just be more of a pro forma review or approval. But I think we can leave those details for another day.
Fair enough. Senator Moore.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if Representative Solberg could or anybody could answer the question for me. I've been a little bit puzzled as to why Waite House isn't a one-time line item appropriation in the finance bill on its own, apart from this, so that it can just... Was that ever part of a discussion?
Senator Moore, to start with, I think it's important to remember that in the House bill, we didn't conceive of our bill as a tort compensation or a claims type response. It was more of a kind of general welfare response to this bridge collapse, trying to address the major issues that were raised. And so from the House bill, there was really no inconsistency between a grant to Waite House and the compensation fund created to address the needs of victims. The goal was to try to have a comprehensive response to the particular event. So that may explain in part why they came together. I believe in the Senate it was amended on in the Finance Committee. And so that's you'll have to answer that question. I don't know if Representative Goldberg can answer
the question. Yeah. 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 I mean, I could be have been carried separately, but in the Senate it's also being carried kind of separately. It's in addition to your 25.
Okay. I think the answer was
use your mic a little bit more.
That this was a distinct event, and we were trying to keep everything together instead of start putting it out to various parts of the bill, of different bills.
And is there no other questions there? Then the final section simply has two parts. First is that there are probably other things that we agreed to in concept, and we'd have to go through our notes, and I would have to go through my notes and make sure that we're on the same page as everybody on other provisions that we agreed to. Senator Lass raised one, which is the right of the survivors to be heard in some way, something that we talked about. Now, we haven't nailed it down, but there may be other provisions that we have agreed to in concept already. And then we would direct Senate Counsel, House Research, bill authors and conference committees who were so inclined to work together and with the Attorney General's office to make sure that all the legal language and details of the bill are consistent with broader state interests and obligations, as well as consistent with the statutory scheme or the bill scheme that we're putting forward. And then we could come back with a proposal, and if there were questions, and address those issues subsequently. That is the, I guess, more detailed thought behind this proposal. This 5:15. I don't know if the Senate is interested in a recess. We could do that if you have an interest in discussing, or if there are further questions, comments from either side. I'm open to whatever approach. See thoughtful faces. Senator Moore.
Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Chairs, do we know if we have received any of the additional information that we've requested?
The answer is Mr. Moffman appears to be no.
Mr. Moffman?
Mr. Chair, members, the answer is no. I believe that I spoke with Mr. Messerly earlier, who is here, I think, also will be getting some information preliminarily the middle of this week, so probably tomorrow.
Thank you.
Looking to see if any of my members have any additional questions at this time.
Representative Tom.
Yeah. One of the points that I talked about why I thought it was so important to keep the structure, the Article 1 type structure in place, was the fact that from talking with survivors and from watching the whole thing unfold, and also from watching our lack of action in the special session, which could deal with the floods which occurred after this, as opposed to, I thought that just having something in statute that would point to, if something like this ever happened again, that it would have been a great relief to them to know that even if we weren't acting as quickly as they wanted us to act, that we could point to something that says we are going to act. And you have to understand that particularly when we went through the special session without doing anything, it really looked as if all we cared about, and when the federal government acted so quickly also on the rebuilding, that we just had no sense of what needed to be done in terms of rebuilding human beings instead of just concrete and steel and so forth. So, I'm a little disappointed at the moving away from this, but I think it seems to me that this is a creative way to keep the existing reliance on the state tort statute, but still give something that you could point to that says, in the future, if something like this happens, not as structured as what I wanted, but something you could point to that said, we know that this is going to be bad, but we did this in the past, and we have a way to do it. So, even though it's not what I wanted, I see it as moving. I see it as being enough of a nudge in that direction to just say it.
Well, Senator Lapp,
Mr. Chairman, it's the path that we are blazing by going through this process is uncharted territory. And this path will already be recognized by any future legislatures tasked with responding to a terribly large and unfortunate event as a way to look at. We've dealt with infrastructure problems, unfortunately, many times over the years as a state and as a legislature. So we knew how to respond to a collapse of infrastructure. It's a different animal to try to figure out a response to this loss of life and injury on this scale. And as I guess I've stated before, this is unprecedented speed for responding to loss of life and injury on this scale. The typical response would take years in the courts.
Yeah.
I hope that the survivors appreciate that even though we couldn't just snap our fingers and respond within a month and a half, which is less than a month and a half when we came in special session, that just going through this whole process, and we've seen all the questions that have come up and all the different bits of information that's taken time to gather, we know better now how to respond if there's a future event than we did back in September.
Senator, I would only add, and maybe Representative Kahn was about to make this point, but Representative Kahn did have an amendment to the flood special session bill, which simply would have required the Department of Finance or Administration to develop a process by which they could come up with some kind of compensation scheme. And if we had done that, it was a very bare kind of minimum level of statement that we are aware of the problem, we are acting, and it's important to address your concerns. I think that might have helped with the level of frustration. But at the same time, the House and Senate, each on their own, began going down this path without there being a state statute, and ultimately leading us here. But we did have an opportunity to make a clear statement in September, and the amendment was not met favorably, and as a result, we didn't make that clear statement. But certainly the Senate, through the Claims Subcommittee in the House, through Representative Kahn, State Government Finance Committee, at least has, I think, made a significant effort to address the issue, hear from people who are affected by it, and try to create a sense of public urgency to address the situation. Senator Lynn.
Mr. Chair, we should note that the Claims Committee was a joint House-Senate body, and that there was the Emergency Hardship Fund made available for wage loss in November, clearly not to compensate people for the total losses, but hopefully took the edge off of those who lost a wage earner or lost significant wages in the process.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I had actually promised not to do that unless Senator Latch brought up again that we couldn't repeal the law of gravity. But I am going to do it anyway. This is like a perfect point. And that's to point out that Einstein died without realizing his greatest desire, which was to mold the law of gravity into a unified field theory. And so that's still an unsettled question in physics today. So it doesn't have to be. So my realization is if Einstein could die with that great disappointment, we don't have to have this perfect today.
Representative Collins, Mr. Chair, I hope you're not prepared to put that on this table.
He's trying to.
No, but I wasn't sure you were going to bring it up again, so just in case.
So you brought it up on your
Yes.
Yeah. Representative Collins, resolving conflicts and competing interests in state legislation is more imperfect than not. I think we all would agree with that.
Well,
what's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I think it would at least behoove us for the Senate members to convene. I don't know if we have any further questions at this point. I know we've got some time to talk before we leave tonight, whether it's enough time for us to actually put together a any kind of a formalized response. I'm not sure that it is. I'm looking. Maybe I could chat briefly with the Senate conferees before we make any final scheduling decisions and see if we want to try to discuss a specific response now, or if we propose to come back another day with that. For scheduling purposes, it would be my goal anyway. I know that neither body is in session tomorrow or Wednesday. I understand the Pension Commission, on which both Representative Kahn and Senator Vetzel serve, is scheduled to meet until tomorrow and Wednesday from at least 9 to 1, and I think recessing until 6 each evening. So there's some opportunity tomorrow afternoon or Wednesday afternoon for us to get the full conference committee back together
I think which day might depend on how quickly the Senate is in a position to put together a response. I don't see any value in reconvening just to hand you a piece of paper. If we could do the same, and give you a chance to review it before we got together to discuss it. Looking for some guidance from my own conferees here. I don't see any head shaking no, so maybe we should recess for us to have a chance to talk and then let you know what we think.
Representative Solberg?
We go in at 6 or 6:07.
Seven.
So it would 30 minutes or is that what 3 minutes? Okay.
Yeah. Then just would it be expected, Mr. Chair, that you'd come back with a proposal or just some other discussion, Senator?
Senator Lance?
I think at least we want to make sure that we've had a chance to flesh out all of our questions about your proposal. I think maybe 30 minutes is too quick for us to come back with a specific proposal and respond.
Disagreement, of course.
Well, that's what I was suggesting.
Also,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chair, I'm pointing out that many of these things leave a lot of room to be fleshed out. So I think we could be very happy with some agreement on some basic principles and then have the next Senate proposal flesh out most of those and go from there.
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, I think I can say confidently that we do agree to resolving this within the concept of the tort claims concept that you have proposed here, and where we flesh out the details in there, I think is something that's open for discussion. I mean, we appreciate that ability to find the path forward, as Representative Winkler has said in the past, within that framework. So I think that's an important step.
All right. Then we will recess until 6 o'clock, let's say, to make it easy. We'll recess. Reconvene the House File 2553 Conference Committee. I think we're just going to adjourn, but we'll talk schedule, and Senator Lass can give an overview, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've had a lengthy, as you can tell, discussion about how to respond to the House proposal. We do appreciate where we are at. We're not in a position to give a formal response right now. One thing we wanted to figure out is if we had any specific questions beyond what we already talked about, so that we had a full understanding of the House proposal. We've concluded at this time we don't have any further questions to ask. If you do, of course, we can follow up with you. But we would anticipate then preparing and presenting a response, a written proposal to the House. It's not going to happen fast enough, I think, for us to reconvene tomorrow. Sometime this week, it's my hope that we'll be able to come up with a proposal that is consensus on the Senate side and present it to the House members so that you have time to consider it before we get back into conference committee. Whether that's as fast as Wednesday or whether it's Thursday or Friday, it's hard to say right now. We're all juggling competing schedules as well. So. Probably the best I can do is say it won't be tomorrow for your planning purposes, and that Representative Winkler and I will be in touch with each other to figure out when the next best time is to get together.
Well, questions or anything further? We are adjourned.